All right, so here we are. Our schedule is starting to be on a kind of a sliding scale here. AA ought never be organized, and there's no danger of it here.
It gets worse.
We'll take a quick moment to pull into the power that got us here and keeps us here. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, we know we're heading into, we're going to have a photograph taken at 12:15. So we need to be like, bang, get the facilitators to shut up at 12:15 as a group deal, okay, please. And we're going to go and have a photograph taken, then we're going to have a lunch and a break. I know it's hard to sit in these chairs and just keep doing this. It's kind of brutal, the listening and the talking. So it'll be nice to have a break. So if we can just hang together long enough to get up to lunch, we'll be all right. We were going to talk about third step last time, but we're going to talk about it right now. So we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him, P.S. or didn't. Right? We don't have to figure out God to do this thing. We just, right? Whatever understanding. Maybe you're here, I'm with you, whatever. That's sufficient. But let's look at the word decision. In the Latin, it comes from the same root as the word incision. It means to cut. So when we're making a decision, we've been going along in a certain way, and we are going to cut that, and we're going to go in a different direction. It's a very profound spiritual move. I can have intention all day long, but if I make a decision, it has tremendous spiritual power in it. I just give that to you as a gift, as it was given to me. So that hereafter in the drama of life, God's going to be our director. So the guy that I took it with initially says, Mickey, there's this play. You're in the play whether you want to be or not. We didn't ask to be created. We are in the play. And he says, do you need a director? A director tells the actor when to show up, what to say, what to do, when to shut up, and when to leave. He says, you've lived your life like a loose cannon on a rolling deck. He says, do you want a director? I said, yes, sir, I sure do. He's the father, and we are the children. Dad, can I have the keys for the car tonight? Wasn't very sophisticated, but I'm listening with my heart. And it's like I needed a father. Forget our spiritual or our earthly fathers. Everybody knows this thing in family can be a real mess. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a father who is good all the time, who knows what's shaken and can help us go in a safe way. He's the principal and we're his agents. So I worked 25 years in an advertising agency. My job was to carry out my principal, my client's wishes. I could put in my creativity, I could make my contribution, but I'm going to do what he says to do. And we are the spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation. In case anybody misses that, the spearhead is the tip. Us. Wrong way Hannigan. Screwed up our lives, drinking ourselves to death, making every mistake in the book. We are spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation. Who must God be if he makes us his spearhead? Right? He is like unbelievable in his belief in us because he sends us out. So we're going to talk about this briefly, and I would like us, for those who are interested, we'll stand up and hook up and say the third step prayer together. Does that appeal to you at all?
Yes.
So what we'll do is we'll just talk here, and then we'll get into some fourth step, knowing that our time is limited, and we'll slide the rest of the fourth step discussion into after lunch. Is that okay? There's a line of demarcation. I can talk about my powerlessness. I can talk about my belief that there may be a God. When I took my first second step, the guy asked me, Mickey, do you believe that there's a God? I said, no, because I knew this was a program of rigorous honesty. Do you believe there's a God? I said, no. Then the guy knew his book, and he said, are you even willing to believe that there's a God? I said, no. He said, Mickey, are you willing to pretend that there may be a God? I said, yes. He said, that's a second step. Let's move forward. And I'm not kidding you. That was my second step. So we can start. God will meet us where we are, I promise you. That's where he met me. And then I took this step, and it says it's good to take it with an understanding person, like our wife or best friend or our spiritual advisor. Okay? And I took it with somebody else. I took this step alone in my self-help mode, starting to work steps in AA. And I did it all by myself, and I tried to write an inventory all by myself in my room. Freaked myself out completely. But the power is in sharing this and doing it with someone else. Yes, it is to make that decision, but to do it with someone else has power. How do they know all that? I guess God was involved in writing this program. That's what I have to offer, Nate.
Sure. That's just an interesting conception, because for most of us, we want to understand before we do, right? I've had many conversations with a few of you already. It's like, I don't like unknown. I don't want to commit to something if I don't know what's to follow, right? And that's the very spirit of the 12 steps. There is no way, at least in my experience, there was no way that I could spend enough time on the second step to truly understand God before I move forward. That's just ludicrous, right? Yet, there were times where I was almost like, man, can I really move forward if I don't really have a thorough understanding of what it is I'm doing? And it's been my experience with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that we drag our bodies along until the spirit catches up. That's how it works, right? I mean, I'm not going to understand everything before I actually experience it. And I've never been able to tack on to someone else's experience with the steps. I've had to have my own. And that's going to be the case for all of us. We all have to have our own experiences with these 12 steps. Unfortunately, there's no way to gain the benefit without the suffering, right? Like we've got a theme this weekend, just suffering. It's all suffering all the time. Yeah. Suffering with great benefit on the other end. It's always
suffering with nice benefits.
Yeah, that's a nice little caveat to that. But so for me, it was important to, when I was first coming in, to say, you know, I don't know. I don't know for sure, right? But I was at least open to the idea, and someone had broken it down for me, that do you feel like you're doing a good job of playing God in your own life? I could at least say no to that, right? I mean, the damage in my life was sufficient enough that I could say, I'm pretty much failing, right? So if I can't do it, there may be an opportunity that something else could. And what I really am doing is seeking new management of my life. I need a manager that can actually handle the job, because I can't, right? I can't, yet I still continually, you know, the whole God is my co-pilot thing, I disagree. I need to be in the trunk of that car, right? Like, I need to be in the trunk. God needs to be driving. I just need to be along for the ride. That's the only way I can have any kind of I don't even want to use the word success, but just happiness or intention or purpose in my life is if I'm following God. So the reality is that when we come to this proposition, I have to make a decision. I have to make this decision, right, to turn my thoughts and my actions over to God. And I'm not one that likes to be half and half. I want to be able to say, okay, I'm all in. Either I'm all in or I'm not in at all, right? Because, again, every step of the way, my alcoholic mind is saying, you can't actually do this. You can make the decision, but you're going to go back on it tomorrow, right? And that's the proposition that I need to make to myself. Is like, but is that, in an ideal situation, do I want to be all in with God? Absolutely. I can answer that without a doubt. Does it mean that's always going to be the way it's going to look in my life? Absolutely not. I'm a human being. I'm a flawed, broken human being that needs to stumble, that needs to stumble to grow, that needs to be wrapped in a cocoon at times to be torn limb from limb, to be transformed. And the reality for me is that I just don't like that. Walking with God is scary. It's scary, and we've talked about that. And I don't know if we talked maybe with Brandon yesterday, but there's a woman named Carolyn Meese. Some of you maybe have heard of her, maybe you haven't. If not, look her up. I mean, this woman is just the way she wrote, or no, it wasn't even a write, it was a talk called Spiritual Madness. And the only reason I bring that up currently is because for those of us that are walking the road with God here on planet Earth with other Earth people, we look insane a lot of the time. Spiritual madness, right? It might make no sense whatsoever when I'm following God to another normal person. They may look at me and say, why would you do that, right? Why would you jump off the ledge, right? I'm just these huge leaps of faith that there's no explanation for it other than I know in my gut, in my heart, and my soul, this is what God wants me to do next. Someone could look at that from a rational perspective and say, you need to have better control of your life. Yeah, no kidding, right? Like, I want better control of my life. I just don't have it. So, I mean, the way that she describes that whole realm of just spiritual madness and what it looks like and the idea of being part of God's ever-advancing creation in that metaphor of the watch, right? I want to be the hour hand, too. I don't want to be the little screw on the bottom of the thing that no one ever sees. Right? I mean, I want to have a role in God's world that matters. I want to matter. And I want to matter in a way that I can validate myself enough that I actually don't even need God. Let's be honest. Right? I want to get to a point where I actually don't even need to rely on God. I just feel so accomplished in my life. I don't say this stuff out loud, right? You people understand me when I'm talking about this. Because a lot of the time, that's the negotiation I have. When I get, you know, the hidden agenda, I'm out. You know, if I could just get a fat enough bank account, I won't need God to feel okay. I'll feel pretty awesome, right? I mean, I'll be able to create all sorts of false security and happiness for myself and just pretend like I don't need God. But I know in my heart that's not true. There is no way that I can live on planet Earth for any amount of time and feel like I'm on track without God at the forefront of everything I do. It's impossible. And when I'm off track, I feel it. I know it. Right? Well, my motives are twisted and I'm just way off track. taking the reins of the show back and saying, this is the way it's going to look, God. Get on board. Right? That was the first 3 or 4 years of my recovery. Was basically making everything happen I wanted to and being like, God's will is great. You know? God has blessed me with all these things, and then behind the scenes I'm like manipulating and twisting and getting I'm shaving down the square peg to fit in the round hole. Right? And it's all me. It's all me. There's no God. And then when things fall apart, again, it's God's fault, right? Really, God? Don't you love me? Don't you love me, God? And it has nothing to do with that. A lot of the time, I just create these disasters, and I end up standing in the middle of it saying, who did this? Right? I mean, it's the story of my life. So, you know, it's so interesting. Then when we look at the third step on page 63, I love this, and for some reason I didn't notice it for years. The phrase that follows the third step prayer is the most important thing I will consider when considering taking the third step and making this decision. And go figure, it says it after, not before. It's kind of confusing, right? It says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Utterly is a pretty powerful word. There's not a whole lot of wiggle room in that word, right? I'm not a 90-10. I'm not a, you know, 60-40 situation here. Utterly, to me, means all in, right? I've got to be all in, and that's scary. So to actually take the time to consider, because I would love to just rely on the execution and the process of this work and not actually have to go into the depths of my being with God and face truth. That's scary. Right? And to actually go and consider what it means to take a third step. I just want to say the prayer and be done with it. On to the next thing, right? Say the prayer. I said the third step prayer so much that it basically became white noise in my prayers. It had zero meaning behind it. And I'm sure other folks can identify with that. We get our script, we get the things we say, our prayers are lined out. The next thing you know, it's time to take a third step, and it's just the words have zero meaning. So for me, what is the intention behind this decision? What am I bringing? What's the weight that's coming behind this? Because it's not about saying a prayer. Is that important? Sure, right? We want to say the prayer. We want to outwardly voice the decision and have that experience. But at the same time, I need to pour my soul into that decision, is what that needs to feel like. It can't just be like I want to say it and move on and be done with it, right? And I've done that many a time. So I would just, I offer that to you, because if the third step prayer has become white noise for you, just like it did for me, and it still can at times, to really just reconsider, what is it we're talking about here, right? Because the 12-step process can almost become monotonous without God, right? And I've experienced monotonous step work and monotonous big book work that has no God in it at all. I'd never say that out loud, though, right? I knew the book. I knew it. And I could teach you. I could, you know, I was the book, right? But again, where was God? And it's unbelievable. Like, I could rely on our very tools and text as a substitute for God in certain situations. That to me is scary. That to me is baffling, right up there with all these other pieces of alcoholism. So we don't have the time to thoroughly consider this third step, but it's worth a ponder for sure.
Thanks, Nate. So I'm sure most of you may have heard this, but the nature of the decision, what we want to say, we want to misquote the step on the wall. We want to say turned our will and our lives over to care of God as we understood Him. That's not what the third step is. Three frogs sitting on a log. One frog makes a decision to jump into the swamp. How many frogs are there sitting on the log? Three. Because all the frog did was make a decision to get into the swamp. If he's going to get into the swamp, he has to take action. And that's our middle step work, 4 through 9. So what we're doing is we're saying, I'm going to give this thing a flyer. I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to take the act. We'll find out if you really meant it. We'll find out if Mickey really meant it. Did you do the middle step work? I'm going through the steps with my sponsor right now. I'm on step 8. So I've made that much progress in saying I really do mean this decision. What I like about standing up and praying this together, I shared this with Brandon. I'm not a Buddhist. I don't know anything about Buddhism, really, but I know that every religion, every spiritual movement has something of value. And one of the main tenets that Buddha talked about was right association. To be with people who are also trying to give this thing a shot helps us. So if you'd like to stand up.
If you don't know the prayer, take your book with you. We'll hook up. Come on around. We're going to get everybody lined up. Here we go. All right, we're good. Sorry.
There's no snake in the circle.
We're circling?
Let's see if we can.
I don't think we can.
This will take us more than... No. All right. God,
I offer myself to Thee, to build with me, to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may enter to Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always.
Sure. Yeah. I always just find it so It's impactful to say a prayer like that in a group like this at any level. It's impactful to do it one-on-one with a person, but there's always just such power. And go figure, like, we're right next door to this amazing prayer turbine that is a monastery. I mean, they're throwing off some serious energy over there that's most definitely trickling into this weekend, as far as I can tell so far. But what I really love to do when I take third steps with people is to build in periods of quiet on either end, because we just squirm when it's quiet, right? To really just consider what it is we're doing, to just kneel down and hold hands and be there in the quiet. I mean, it really stirs up some things, right? And after the fact, just let it settle in, right? Let the decision settle in. It's just it's an interesting experience that I find beneficial. So, just throw that out there.
Thanks, Dave. There's a promise in that third step prayer if you think about it. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. No victory, no witness. Think about it. Take away my difficulties, not so I can feel better. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. That this thing works. That there's real transformation available to us. And there ain't but one way to find out. And that is to do it. Not to think about it, not to be in preparation for it, not to ask everybody in AA, what happened with you, what happened with you? Go and have our own experience. Find out. Either this sucker works or it doesn't. And there ain't but one way to find that out. So a man told me, he said, Mickey, I want to do an exercise with you. I'm going to put a glass full of water in your imagination. I'm going to put a glass full of water in front of you and a pitcher full of water. What I'd like you to do is pour some water from that pitcher into that glass. Can you do it? And I said, no. And he said, why? I said, because the glass is full. He said, what do you have to do to get water from that pitcher into that glass? I said, I have to empty the glass. And he said, now we're talking about 4 through 9. He said, what's in that pitcher is God. What's in that glass is self. And what we're going to do in our middle step work is we're going to empty that glass so that God can pour in. How many of you have taken somebody through the steps? And in that sponsorship, if it was a sponsorship relationship, have you ever had things coming out of your mouth that just amazed you? Have you noticed? I had this thing in high school. I didn't get kicked out of high school, but this senior English nun had been watching me for 3 years. And I guess she wanted to head me off at the pass or something. I don't know what. But we went in before the school year began, and she asked me the strangest question. She said, Mickey, what do other people think of you? Not what do I think of other people, but what do other people think of you? It was the first time in my life that anybody had ever asked me to be objective. And yet we take it as common currency that we can sit down and write an inventory and have an objective look at ourselves in the fourth column. That's a gift from God. How in the world could I answer those questions since I'm so involved I got to write an inventory? Self-involved, right? And when we counsel somebody else, God's wisdom is pouring out of us. Now, I can't apply that wisdom to myself, but I can receive it from my sponsor or someone else. But I can offer that to someone else as a gift. So, I begin this thing. I looked at the fourth step inventory as like really limited when I came in here. What kind of a thorough inventory is resentments, fear, and sex? I mean, surely there's got to be a lot more than that. And in fact, there are people who really wind up and create their own inventory. Because the one other thing, if we're all competitive, is one characteristic of human nature. The other one is, if you give us a job, we will immediately begin to change things. Right? So the big book has laid it out, and it works. If we do it right like this, I can guarantee that. I can, from my own experience and watching others, say that if you do it right as it's stated in the book, you will change, and your life will change and improve. You know what they really meant to say. I'll tell you what they really meant to say. It's nonsense. Well, anyway, that's my opinion. And it turns out, somehow or other, that writing a resentment inventory, a fear inventory, and a sex inventory will really begin to untie the knots and identify and go into healing where it hurts by some gift from God. So, I would like to offer, and it's not in the book, but I believe it's in the spirit of the book. I had a dramatic change between writing inventory, just sitting down and writing it, and doing two extra things. One of them is to write a prayer across the top of every page of inventory I write. Some request of God to help me do this. I can't admit that I'm powerless on the one hand, and then charge right into a four-step inventory on my own. So I write at the top of the page, God, thank you for the truth and the freedom. God, please help me see the truth. Whatever the prayer, doesn't matter. But it's just some request to God, will you please help me do this spiritual act? The other one came because the first real formal inventory I wrote, I just started writing. I'm resentful at whatever. And here we go. What happened was I had no sense of there ever being an end to this inventory. And I got terrified. This was, you know, searching, fearless, and never-ending inventory. So what I do now is I tell people, write a prayer across the top of the page and make a master list of everything, person, institution, principle that you're pissed off at. Now, let's say this is not your first inventory, and you've got something that's hung over from the years. I wrote on my mother for 6 years, and I could not get down to the bottom of it until 6 years had passed. So if something recurs, I think it is legitimate, if you're still carrying it, to put it on the list. And the two things I ask people to really consider putting on their list, that list is two names, God and mine. People say, well, now you can't write inventory about yourself. And I go, are you resentful at yourself? Of course you can put yourself in it. And that can be some of the most fruitful inventory I write. Okay, so as far as structuring the thing, that's what I do. And then I take a name off that list, and I do a four-column inventory with it. I'm resentful at the cause affects my and my fault. Now, I know that there are people, and incidentally, I'm just offering you what I do. You do what you do. But I'll give you a reason for what I do. When I take a name off that and write resentment inventory, I go straight across. One column, two, three, four. Why? I know there are people who do all the names, and then they do all the second column, they do all the third column, and then they go into their fault. What I think that in effect does is it leaves me with myself for the bulk of that inventory experience, as opposed to following what the book says. If I go straight across, I will look at your fault and what you did to affect me, but I will go immediately to my fault, and there's closure. Is this making any sense? There's closure. I can say, yeah, this inventory is mine. I can now forget you entirely. Forget that other person entirely. This is where I'm at fault. Then I go to the next one, and all of it's house cleaning all the way. So I just offer that from a technical standpoint. If I continue, there's got to be a decision for me that I am going to write this inventory unless another barn burner shows up in me. then I say, oh, I forgot that one. But if I'm going to add every time somebody makes me angry in traffic or in the supermarket or whatever, that thing once again will become never ending. So at some point, I draw an arbitrary line and say, for this pass through the steps, this is what I'm going to write about. Okay? Now, I'll give you a difference between a fleshed out third and fourth column and just stating just the bare bones of the columns. This is out of my first inventory. I told you I was very, very skinny. So I had a guy who called me skinny, and I was resentful at him. I'm resentful at Joe Blow. Why? He called me skinny. It affects my self-esteem, my security, my ambitions. What is my fault? I'm selfish, dishonest, and self-seeking, and frightened. Do you know anything about how I really felt? Now, we can do it that way, bing, bang, bong, and that's the way the example in the book is. Or we can take that and I can say, I'm resentful at Joe Blow because he called me skinny. It affects my self-esteem. I'm embarrassed about the way I look. I feel less than. I'm starting to open the door. It doesn't have to be a novel. It can be just a few words. If I put it on that list, I must have had a reason for putting it there. All I'm doing is writing out the reason. My security. I want to fit in. Personal relationships. What are people going to think of me? You understand? I'm fleshing it out. Now when I do my fifth step, first of all, I'm getting the gift of that immediately. Then when I do my fifth step, I've got that to share. And so I really am confessing my faults and what's really bothering me. And that same is true in the fourth column. I had one that I said, I esteem myself to be Sylvester Stallone. I'm being dishonest. I'm trying to rewrite Mickey so I can carry this image like I did to be the captain of the football team and be a good dancer. I'm off in la-la land. I am skinny. Now, the fact that he took time out of his life to call me that, that's on him. That's on him. But my reactions to it and all this cancer that I'm carrying about it is on me. You know, when they invented nylon, it was like this miracle fabric. And they had the 1939, whatever it was, World's Fair, and they dangled a very heavy ball, a metal ball, and it looked like it was floating in air, and it was floating on one single strand of nylon. And people were like, oh my God, this is a real breakthrough. So they gave it to our Air Force, Navy, and Marine pilots as they were flying their aircraft. Now, if you know anything about nylon, what happens to nylon when it gets around a flame? It melts. So not only were our pilots going in on a crash, and they were experiencing the entire trauma of that crash, but they were being, a secondary burn was happening to them. They had to get them out of those nylon suits. So what happens is, you'll call me skinny, and that burns me. But the secondary burn is coming from me. I will carry that around for weeks and months, and I'm not capable of not carrying it around. I have to have God remove that from my soul, which is why we have the rest of the steps. But this searching and fearless inventory, a moral inventory, I'd never taken anything that none asked me to be objective. Now I get to be objective in here and not carry that stuff anymore, because I will kill myself with that. Literally, I will kill myself with that. And it says resentment kills more alcoholics than anything else. Now I want to share this real quickly in terms of the fear inventory. When I first took my inventory, they said, well, just write anything you're afraid of. I'm afraid of the crowds. I'm afraid to be alone. I'm afraid of the dark. I'm afraid of the light. I get to the end of that thing, I got nothing. So what does the book have to say about it? On page 68, I do a one paragraph, four sentence fear inventory, just to touch base with the book. It says, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. Now, there are people who, because we were given four columns to structure it, they will write a four column inventory, fair enough, whatever. But I have this paragraph. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked okay, so I got a fear. Boom. I'm afraid of elevators. We asked ourselves why we had them. I'm afraid the cable will snap and the elevator will fall and I'll die. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? What am I doing from a self-reliant standpoint to deal with that fear? I'm not going to get on elevators. That's the way I'm going to handle this, which is not addressing the fear, incidentally. I'm not going to get on elevators. I'm going to manage this. And it says, perhaps there's a better way. We think so, for we're now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying on God. So I put, I'm afraid of elevators. Why? I'm afraid the cable will snap and I'll die. I'm selfishly trying to preserve my life by not getting on elevators. And my fourth sentence is stated this way. I am not trusting and relying on God to care for me and protect me. Because I may be afraid of elevators, now I'm not going to get on elevators. I'm afraid to fly. I'm not going to get on airplanes. I'm afraid to answer the phone because it could be a bill collector. I'm not going to answer the phone. I started out in bed and I'm going to end up back in bed because my life's going to get narrower and narrower and narrower. I can ride on elevators, in elevators. I can travel on airplanes. Doesn't mean I'm going to do it fear-free, but I got the power to do it. So that's how I write fear inventory. And on page 69, there's considerations for a sex inventory. Now, I understand that there are people who take the sex inventory and make it a relationship inventory, and fair enough, truth is truth. But for me, it's about a sexual or romantic relationship. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? I answer the question. Whom had we hurt? I answer the question. Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Answer the question. Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? It was amazing for a period of time people would not answer that question that I was sponsoring. What should I have done instead? Mine was I shouldn't have been there in the first place under those circumstances over and over and over again. And we got this all down on paper and looked at it. There's my three-part fourth step. And it can be really a long one. I just did a fourth step and I did it on four pieces of paper. It's just because that was what was available or apparent for this time. I'm taking this time and we'll go in with you, Sharon, on the fourth step for the next one because we're out of here at 12:15.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the trick. The secret to doing this is to pick up the 1,000-pound pencil and actually write. This guy asked me, he said, Mickey, do you have alcoholism every day? I said, yes. He said, have you done your work on your disease today? The work I'm doing when I'm at fourth step is to write my fourth step inventory daily. We could take 10 minutes and sit down and write out a piece of resentment inventory. And we've done our work that day. And that day will put my disease on ice for that day to be compliant with my program. It ain't rocket science, but it is really hard work. We're going to go get our picture took.